Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour that will help you. Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the UCC and straw man argument when we come back. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only upon the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our population, with a top tax rate of only 7%. Today, of course, the fears of the early opponents of this tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top tax rate had jumped to 60%. And by the time Franklin Roosevelt was done, the top rate was over 90%. And the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th to earn enough to pay the tax man at all levels. This year, the average American family will work all the way through May 12th, in order to earn enough money to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when we compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output, and they were considered slaves. Now, what does that make us today? This income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. And the income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And that's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask the question, do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Our tax and status school is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing called the UCC argument, straw men. Where does it lead? Where did it come from? Well, I showed you last time that it came from a guy named Hartford Van Dyke back in the early 1990s. It was picked up by the Montana Freeman, popularized. It's been picked up by a number of patriot groups all over America. It is probably the hottest item going in patriot circles today. It's everybody that I know of, and they're sending me letters constantly telling me about how great and how wonderful this thing is. My conclusion is it's just nonsense, legal hocus pocus. But I got a couple of letters in here, and one written by Stephen said, could you do a story on credit card collections and disclosure statements and the rules as to third-party debt collection under administrative and maritime claims and talk about the remedies? Because there's a lot of straw man talk and or debt elimination talk going on out here in the patriot community due to the lack of backing of U.S. Federal Reserve notes. Could you touch on that subject a bit? And so I said, yeah, we can do that. And so we're starting off by talking about this straw man thing. So I went to, number one, the history of the straw man thing. I took that from Larry B. Craft's website. And I don't have Larry B. Craft's web page right in front of me here. I want to give him credit because Larry B. Craft actually took the negative and said, well, let me show you why UCC is a poor argument. And I cited to you eight cases last night, eight cases where this straw man thing has been tested over a number of different subjects, legal topics. And it has been shot down eight times out of eight that we've got here, including federal and state courts all over America. And I said to you last time, I said, you know, if you want to win, you do what the winners do. If you want to lose, you do what the losers do. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm just here to tell you that if you want to win, you got to get on the winning track. And UCC straw man is just BS. It's not a winning argument. It doesn't have any legal merit at all. So the second thing I did was I picked up a letter here from a guy up in Canada who actually tested this. He actually went into court up in Canada using the UCC. And he called me on the telephone, he and a buddy of his, and they were talking to me about his legal problems, and he's facing jail. In fact, he didn't call me back after I got these, and my presumption is he's probably in jail right now. How long is he going to be in jail? I don't know, maybe a year or two or three. I don't know. I can't tell you. But everybody that I know of that has been involved in this went to jail. And I've had several students come through here espousing the greatness and the wonders of this thing of writing these site drafts and commercial documents. God, they work like a shot, boys and girls. And I pointed out to you last time that when you write a bad check, it's going to work like a shot when you walk out of the store with the goods. Call me back a year later and tell me how it came out. Writing bad checks is fraud. It's theft. It's criminal. It violates thou shalt not steal. And furthermore, the Bible tells us very plainly not to use unjust weights and balances. That includes Federal Reserve notes, mortgages, commercial paper, credit cards, you know, on and it goes. Now, people have it in their minds that what they really want to do is they want to practice banks and banking with checks and credit cards. They don't want to pay the income tax. I don't know how to do that. I know how to get out of the income tax. Stop having income. And then right away, somebody's, you know, they get snide and they get snippy with me. They, well, how do you make your living then? You know, I got to get kind of raucous about it. Typically, they say, well, how do you live then? And the answer is, I live very well, thank you. And I live on increase instead of income. And I deal in property instead of profits. Now, when you have income, dealing in Federal Reserve notes and commercial paper, you owe a tax. And you need to pay your federal and state income taxes. I think you should avoid Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and dealing in dollars or escudos or rubles or rupees or whatever it is you're dealing in. And I think you should deal in gold and silver coin and wheat, corn, beans, onion, oil, which is called property. And if your laws are anything like the laws of the United States, property has never been assessed or taxed in the United States of America. Not in our history. I kind of doubt that you Englishmen over there or Frenchmen are being taxed in your property either. Anglo-Saxons have been following the Ten Commandments and biblical law and the law of property since Mount Sinai, which is about 3,000 years ago. We haven't been taxed on our property. We have been taxed on our commercial transactions, trade, commerce, business, and industry as it affects the public interest. And as a result of that, we have some debts, and we have a lot of contracts out here with kings and queens and states and governments that we have to perform on, and it's kind of onerous. Now, I mentioned in my ad here when we started that in the early days, the top tax rate was 7%. Well, back in 1913, when tithing was 10% and the top tax rate was 7%, that was really appealing, wasn't it? You'd save 3 whole percentage points. Then they ran it up to 60%, and then under Franklin D. Roosevelt, up to 90%. Boys and girls, if government can tax you 7%, they can tax you 70%. If God can tax you 10%, he can tax you 100%. But so far, God has always stuck with his program, 10%. It was 10% under Moses' regime, and it's 10% today. It has not gone up. Governments, hell, you never know what the tax rate's going to be with government. They give you tax cuts like George Bush, and then the next administration will give you tax increases. You know, you never know. Hell, it changes time and time again. And that's why God said, I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now, last time we were talking about this fellow Stewart. Now, Stewart actually tested this UCC thing. He went to jail once, or if he didn't go to jail, he was convicted and was about to go to jail, but then he had some court dates around Passover. And he never called me back, so my presumption is he's probably gone to jail. But last time we were talking about this thing of his agreement with a guy named Ernie Bobowski. Now, Stewart claims that this is an agreement, and I pointed out to you last time, just because he sent him a letter and said, hey, if you don't answer this and deny it, then you agree to it, is nonsense. That's not true. That's not accurate. It's not correct. That's not a contract. But I think Stewart believes that he has a contract here with Ernie Bobowski based upon this false premise that if I send you a letter, and I say, you owe me $10,000, and you don't write me a letter right back, certified mail, denying that you owe me the $10,000, then you admit that you owe me the $10,000, and we have a contract. And that's just crap. I don't know where reason, logic, and common sense comes in, but that's not true. Even if you believe that it's true, that doesn't make it true. He says, it is agreed that if it aids your own process in gaining agreements with others, I will gladly take the names of those who you feel may need agreements of their own to protect themselves if you will honor me with those names and contact information. I put a little bracket there. I put an arrow there, and I said, that statement makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. I don't understand what those words mean. I don't understand what that statement says. I don't know why that statement is in this letter to Mr. Bobowski. And this is typical of the material that I read from patriots and patriot material. It is nonsensical. It doesn't make any sense. It has no legal meaning. It doesn't take us anywhere. It doesn't tell us anything. This is what you would read if you were reading poetry or if you were reading Harlequin books or something, you know. That's some kind of fiction. It doesn't have any place in law, doesn't have any place in reason, logic, or common sense or trying to settle a grievance. He goes on, he says, it is agreed that I, acting God's minister, am doing my duty in official performance of the functions of my calling as God's minister, and that you, the private man, are in recognition of that function of good faith and my biblical reasons for ministering the facts to you in the same truthful manner as Jesus Christ ordained. Leviticus 6, 2 through 5 may shed some light on it. Okay, let's take that paragraph. My comment here to you, Stewart, are you claiming to be a Levite? I am acting as God's minister. I think that's pretty heavy duty. Now, there was a number of people, a group of people called Levites that God called out at Mount Sinai. And he said, these are my servants. These are my inheritance. And their inheritance is with me. And they were separated out for the civil service. They're called Levitical priests. They delivered the mail, filled the potholes in the streets, and they ran city hall and the police department, put out the fires. They were what we would call today civil servants. Now, is that what you're claiming to be? Because if that's the case, then you needed to be born genetically to one of those Levites. Do you have any evidence that you're a Levite? Now, I know there are preachers, there are religious people running around here in the world today, especially here in the United States, and I presume up there in Canada, that call themselves ministers of God. Well, which God are you serving? Is it Satan, or is it the God of creation? Is it the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Because if it is, then he can't serve two masters. Now, Matthew 6:24, he told you plainly, he can't serve two masters. Now, God has called some people, and they are, in fact, his ministers. I'm not one of them. Don't count me in that group. People send me letters all the time and say, well, we're following your teachings, Mr. Gordon. And I'm sitting here saying, I don't have any teachings to follow. How in the hell can you follow the teachings of George Gordon? I don't have any teachings to follow. I didn't come up with this idea. I don't make the laws of Canada. I don't make the laws of the United States. In the last program, I suggested, just as a wild concept, why don't we obey the laws that are already on the books? Why don't we just do what's already ordained in the law for us to follow, for us to practice? I know it's a wild new idea, but, you know, give it a little thought. We've got plenty of laws I don't think we need anymore. Why don't we just do what we've already got and avoid all of this new law thing? Now, you can't come up with new laws arbitrarily. I mean, Joe Sixpack walking down the street comes up and says, gee, I've just come up with a great new law. I think we'll put this into practice. Laws at the secular level have to run through your parliaments and through your city councils. They have to go through your legislative process to become law. And God told us not to do that. In Deuteronomy 4, verse 2, and Deuteronomy 12, verse 32, he says, don't you add to this law, don't you take away from this law, you just do exactly what I tell you. The legislatures of your provinces up there, their only function is to alter, reform, amend, or abolish the law of God. That's the only purpose for a legislature, which we were told not to do. But now that we've done it, now that we've got this king, the queen, the president, the governor, the legislature, the Congress, the parliament, and we decided to change God's laws because obviously he didn't know what the hell he was doing. You know, he's kind of an old fogey. And we're going to improve upon it. We're going to fix his mistakes. And we've already done that. Those laws are on the books, and we have to follow those. And the inappropriate use of those laws gets you into trouble. Now, you're bringing the element of religion in here, and you brought in the element of Leviticus 6, verses 2 through 5. So I took the liberty of looking it up. And here's what it says. Leviticus 6, 2. If a soul sins and commits a trespass against the eternal, and lies unto his neighbor in that which was delivered him to keep, or in fellowship, or in a thing taken away by violence, or has deceived his neighbor, or has found that which was lost, and lies concerning it, and swears falsely in any of all of these that a man doeth, sinneth therein, then it shall be because he has sinned and is guilty, that he shall restore that which he took violently away, or the thing which he has deceitfully gotten, or that which was delivered to him to keep, or the lost thing which he found, or all that about which he has sworn falsely, he shall even restore it in the principal, and shall add the fifth part more thereto, and give it unto him to whom it appertaineth in the day of his trespass offering. Now, in your letters here, Stuart, you're claiming that Mr. Bobowski over here owes you $14 million. If we took your number, $14 million, I'd have to ask the question, excuse me, but did Mr. Bobowski take $14 million away from you, and does he owe $14 million plus 20%? When did we ever go to court? When did we ever establish these numbers? I mean, you're claiming $14 million. Did Mr. Bobowski come into court? Did he have an opportunity to come in with witnesses, evidence, and testimony? Did he have an opportunity to face, confront, and cross-examine your witnesses against him? Has he ever had notice and opportunity to defend? And if so, when did that ever take place, Stuart? Don't you think that Mr. Bobowski over here has a right to bring in witnesses, evidence, and testimony in his own defense? Shouldn't he have a right to cross-examine your witnesses against him? How did you arrive at the number $14 million? I mean, you know, these are all questions that need to come out in litigation, and in your letters, I've read your letters, and I don't see that Mr. Bobowski had anything, any opportunity to defend against these allegations that you're making. And if this guy owed you the money, why don't you sue him in court and take him in there, and let's go collect it? I mean, there's a statutory methodology in every Anglo-Saxon country for collecting money. Well, all you got to do, if you want to test this, just go down to any department store and buy some stuff and don't pay for it. I think that there's going to be a judicial remedy for the department store. They're going to get their stuff back. They're going to put you in jail for fraud. They're going to get a judgment against you. They're going to put a lien on your house. They're going to, you know, we've got methodologies for doing that. If this guy owes you $14 million, hey, there's a way to collect it, and this is not the way. So right away, I see religion being brought in here. I see the Bible being brought in here. It looks like it's off point and out of context to me. And if it is, and if it isn't off point and out of context, then it ought to be litigated. There ought to be names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence on both sides brought before a judge or a jury so that they can make a determination. Maybe he does owe you some money. Maybe it isn't $14 million. Maybe it's only $387,211.14. I don't know. But I'm reading your paperwork here, and your paperwork doesn't make sense. It doesn't follow any legal regime that I have any knowledge about. I'm a law school teacher. I'm an instructor. No, I don't know everything, but I know a bunch. I know quite a bit. I can't see any merit to this. Last time I showed you an attorney practices law day in and day out. He said he researched this thing out. He couldn't find any evidence of it. Then he cited 8 cases over here, and 8 courts have come to the same conclusion that this UCC stuff here is just nonsense. 8 cases. Are you going to tell me that 8 courts over here, a lawyer and one law school instructor, are all wrong, and this UCC thing is all right? By what authority do you make this claim? Under the Uniform Commercial Code? Uniform Commercial Code? What the hell has that got to do with false arrest and false imprisonment, Stuart? Which is what I think that you're arguing here in your letter. Let's go on a little bit further, and you make another claim here. It is agreed that I am sending you these agreements in following the advice of Jesus in Matthew 5:25 and Matthew 18:15 through 20 to gain from your good faith acceptance of our offer by your lack of reply that would dismiss our offer of facts. Sounds kind of legalese, doesn't it? Dismiss our offer of facts. What in the hell is an offer of fact? You know, I'm a legal man over here. I don't know what the hell an offer of fact is. I can see a tender offer. I know what that is. Did you make a tender offer to Mr. Bobowski? Did he accept your tender offer? If so, where is the signed notarized agreement? Did you offer it into evidence? And furthermore, these letters don't have any legal effect because there isn't any judicial remedy that you can get, that you can receive, based upon the facts that you are alleging here. There isn't any remedy for you. So if there isn't any remedy, then why even write the letter? You know what I mean? Let's suppose I wrote a letter to Sears Roebuck and said, send me $10 million, you owe it because you did these bad things to me. And I list all the bad things that somebody did in the name of Sears. Why would they want to send me any money? Why would they even answer my letter? There isn't any legal basis for making that kind of claim. If there was a legal basis, I need to write a complaint and file it in my local court and summons them into the court before the judge. And that's the normal way to do that. Now you cite Matthew 5:25 and Matthew 18:15 through 20, that this is the advice of Jesus. Well, what did Jesus advise us in Matthew 5:25? I don't know. Let's flip over there and find out. Just as a wild idea, we'll just actually read Jesus' words in Matthew 5:25 and see what did Jesus tell us. He says, agree with your adversary quickly while you are in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver you to the judge, and the judge deliver you to the officer, and you be cast into prison. Stuart, that sounds like good advice to you. And this guy's a judge. This Ernie Bobowski is a judge. And it would seem like to me that you should agree with this judge quickly, lest he cast you into prison. Look over here in Exodus 21, in verse 20. Here's a 22, 28. Let me see if I'm right. 22, 28. It says, you shall not revile the judges, nor curse the ruler of your people. There's a law here that Moses gave us to honor the judges. It's against the law to commit contempt of court. Stuart. And it looks like to me that when the judge gives you an instruction, you know, you should salute smartly and say, yes, sir. Now, if the judge made an error, you can appeal it. There's a provision here in the Bible. Now, you can take a decision that comes out of a Levite here at the lowest level and take it all the way up to the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement. In fact, in Anglo-Saxon administration, our appellate process is predicated upon that concept, the concept of appeal, which is expressed in Numbers chapter 36, last chapter of Numbers, over an inheritance, for instance. And they took it up to the Holy of Holies. God comes in, sits down on the mercy seat and says, okay, Aaron, bring to me what haven't you been able to decide this year? And he would decide it. And then once the decision comes down, our job is to carry it out, which is why I said earlier, don't you think we ought to just follow the laws that we already have? We're not short of laws. We got plenty of laws on the books. So I don't see that Matthew 5:25 applies in this case here. Unless it applies to you, you should agree with the judge and follow his instruction. Matthew 18, let's flip over to Matthew chapter 18 here and see what you're claiming here in Matthew 18, 15 through 20. Moreover, if your brother shall trespass against you, go tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he shall hear you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear you, then take 2 or 3 witnesses. And in the mouth of 2 or 3 witnesses, every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear them, then tell it to the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. Truly I say unto you that whatsoever you shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever you shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again I say to you that if 2 of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that you shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. For where 2 or 3 are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst of them. I don't see anything in this UCC letter that you've written here to Ernie Bobowski here that would fit in with that instruction from Jesus. Did you take 2 or 3 witnesses to Mr. Bobowski? Did you say, now look, Ernie, I think that you owe me $14 million because, and here's why I think you ought to pay me. And if you don't, then I'm going to take it to the church. You know, in our modern day and age, this guy Bobowski sounds like he's probably a Pole. He's probably a Catholic. I don't know what you are, Stuart, but I would just make my guess and say, well, he's a Catholic and you're probably a WASP. How's that going to work? You're going to come over here with three Baptists and tell this Catholic that you don't like his decision? I don't think that's going to work. I think that that is aimed at people. You know, there's an old proverb that goes, can two walk together except they be agreed? And I think Baptists agree with one another, and that's why they go to the Baptist church, and Catholics agree with one another, and that's why they go to the Catholic church. And Democrats agree with one another, and that's why they vote for Hillary Clinton. I can see the logic behind that. I can't see any logic in going to this guy unless he's a member of your church, a member of your local laity in your church, and he has wronged you in some way, and you want to complain about that. I don't see that that's got any merit. And it certainly doesn't have any legal merit insofar as suing him here in court because he owes you some money. I mean, you come into court and you start citing the scripture, and the judge is going to say, what's this got to do with the price of putty? I mean, you know, religion's all well and good, but doesn't that kind of belong in church? Now, the Jews have a methodology for taking care of their own. They've got a name for this, too, and I keep slipping my mind. But, for instance, in New York City, Diet Ben, I believe they call it, Diet Ben, B-E-N, D-I-E-T-B-E-N, something on that order. And one Jew wrongs another Jew. He doesn't go downtown and sue him in federal court. He takes that Jew and he goes into the Diet Ben, the local Jewish church court. And he says, this Jew over here wronged me. And here's what he did. And the guy has an opportunity to come in and defend, to bring in witnesses, evidence, testimony, to settle this conflict. Jews settle their conflicts among themselves. The Jews follow this biblical instruction here. They actually follow this with what they call the Diet Ben. I don't know that Christians do that. I haven't seen any do that. I guess they could if they wanted to. And there might be some that actually carry this law out. But as a general rule, they don't. It doesn't have any merit at all. If you're going to sue a magistrate or an RCMP or somebody like that, does he belong to your church? I don't know, Stuart. That doesn't make any sense to me. Let me give you your mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. And the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet for your listening convenience by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, the scriptural citations that you have placed in this letter to Mr. Bobowski, I don't think serve any purpose. Unless Mr. Bobowski, of course, belonged to your church. You go on to say here that it is agreed that all property and value that was taken in fraud unlawfully in de facto authority will be returned to Stuart, the man of God, at his church and base of his ministry, and that you will ensure that those private men and women who were responsible for the theft and conversion of funds will submit to return such items and value to the man of God so aforementioned. I think I would read the story in Numbers chapter 16, and it's called the story about Korah. And this guy, Korah, was dissatisfied with Moses. He wasn't satisfied with the government that was in place. And that's pretty normal. Americans and Anglo-Saxons in general, and Americans in particular, have always been dissatisfied with their government. That's why we like to vote every 2 years. It's because we're so dissatisfied with government, we want to change. Now, we didn't even like God Almighty himself. I mean, we threw God out of office. You can read about that in 1 Samuel chapter 8. We are the only people in the world that ever threw their God out of office. The Muslims wouldn't think of throwing Allah out. The Buddhists wouldn't think of throwing Buddha out. The Shintoists wouldn't think about throwing Shinto out of office. But we Americans, we Britons, we Frenchmen, we Israelites, we threw the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob out of office. Get the hell out of here. We don't want anything to do with you or your law. We're going to have our own king. We're going to have our own law. Well, now that you got it, Stuart, how do you like it? You got the law of Canada. You like it. That's the complaint that I get here. Day in and day out, people write and they send emails and say, I belong, or I live in the People's Republic of Michigan. I live in the People's Republic of California. I live in the slave state of Florida. You know, we're just never satisfied with the government. And I'm sitting here saying, what the hell difference does it make to you who's sitting in the White House, Bill Clinton or George Bush? It doesn't affect your life one way or the other. You're driving truck for Walmart. What the hell's that got to do with the price of putty? You know, you get down on the bottom line. All of this complaint that we have about these governments and government agents and one thing and another has to do with our criminal behavior. Now, Stuart, you broke some laws here. And this guy, Cora, thought he was going to be God's savior. I mean, honest to God, in his mind, he must have thought, well, I'm going to create a loyal opposition. You got to read that story because God killed him, all of his family, and all the princes that followed him. Everybody that was involved in 14,700, as I recall the number, killed them all in about 5 minutes in one afternoon. Opened up the earth, had an earthquake, opened up the earth, they fell into it and closed up and said, the election's over. Moses is retained in office, reelected by unanimous consent. Now, the people hated Moses. The people wanted to stone Moses. The people wanted to kill him. They wanted to go back to Egypt. So don't ever get it in your head now that the people liked Moses. The people probably loved Korah. They would vote for Korah. God was the only one that counted, and there was only one vote cast, and God cast his vote for Moses, and that was the end of the election. Moses and God is not a Democrat. If you think that God is in favor of democracy, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy. God is an autocratic dictator. I'm talking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I mean, this guy, he doesn't run for office. He's not asking for your vote. He doesn't give a rat's ass about what you think. And of course, that's why we hate him, but then that's another story for another day. So if you think you're a man of God, you may be. I don't know. I can't tell you. But I'm not. I don't come here on the air and say I represent God or Jesus or anybody else. I just represent myself. I'm just expressing my view based upon what I see out here, and I try to base this on reason, logic, and common sense. This God that we see in the Bible, he's called the God of Abraham over here. You know, he's 21 years old. This guy can represent himself. He can talk for himself. He doesn't have any problems. I'm just here as Joe Sixpack, you know, suggesting that, well, maybe this guy's got something intelligent to say. Maybe we ought to follow his instructions. Maybe we'd get a better result if we practiced the Ten Commandments instead of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. You know, I'm not opposed to communists. If communists want to practice the Ten Planks, get after it. I tested the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto personally, and it didn't work well for me. So I quit. Now, if you think they work well for you, you know, get after it. I tested the Ten Commandments, and they work very well for me, and that's why I'm suggesting that you give it a thought, give it a shot, you know, give it a try, and I think maybe you'll get the same results I'm getting. I'm not complaining about the government. I'm not complaining about Ernie Babowski. I'm not claiming that Ernie owes me $14 million. Ernie's not trying to throw my ass in jail. You know, I'm getting along real well with Ernie. I'm getting along real well with OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission. Now, there was a time when I couldn't get along with any of them either. But anyway, you go on to say here, Stuart, it is agreed. It is agreed. And you keep using the term, it is agreed. And honest to God, Stuart, I don't think that there's any lawful agreement between you and Ernie. I think Ernie is a judge. And I don't think that you're following Exodus 22:28. I don't think you're following these scriptures that you're citing here in the scripture. And I think you're at odds and loggerheads with two laws. First of all, you got the law of God, and you're in opposition to that, and you've got the law of the state of or the province of Saskatchewan and the nation of Canada up here, and I don't think you're in compliance with anybody's law. And you've got this UCC argument up here, which, by the way, do you even have a uniform commercial code up there in Canada? See, this UCC is American commercial law, and it certainly has connections all over the world. I mean, there's commercial law in all these various and sundry countries, but do you call it the Uniform Commercial Code up there in Canada, or do you have a different name for it? Are you trying to apply American law in Canada? How the hell is that going to work? You know, when I go into court down here, I got to tell you a little story here. I had a case one time. A salesman came in here. In fact, he came in at my invitation. I called Westlaw, and I said, send me a salesman. I want to buy some books. And the Westlaw salesman came in. And I said, I want to buy these books. And he said, good, we'll sell you these books. And we wrote them all up. And he said, now, would you like the updates? And I said, well, what's that cost? And he said, nothing, they're free. And he said, just initial right here. And so I initialed this box. And I didn't read the fine print. I just took his representation. They're free. He didn't lie. He just didn't give me all the facts. They're free for the first year. And then at the end of 1 year, you have to send them notice and say, I don't want these updates any longer. Because if you don't send them a notice and say, I don't want these updates any longer, then they keep sending you the updates and they're not free. All right. So a year goes by, and I didn't read this, and he didn't tell me that I had to cancel at the end of 1 year or they were going to charge me. So they sent those for a full year. Now, the first year, they sent them to me, and I didn't pay, and that was fine. The second year, they sent them to me, And they started sending me bills. And I said, well, this isn't right. And I told the wife, I said, you know, write them a letter and tell them that there's something wrong here. And so she wrote two or three letters. And one day they said, hey, you owe us this amount of money. And here's the crazy part. The books I bought were, I think they were $9,000. And the updates were more than the $9,000 worth of books that I bought. The updates were another $9,000 or $10,000. So that now I started off owing them $9,000, paying $50 a month, and now I owe them $18,000. And they said, you're in default, and we're going to charge 18% interest and blah, 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 blah. So when they got down to getting kind of hot and heavy, you know, I said, listen, I'm going to send you your damn books back, and I'm not going to pay you anymore. Well, they sued me. So we went into court here in Gainesville. Judge Moody was the presiding judge, and I alleged that I had been defrauded. Now, if you'll take a look at the statute of frauds here, fraud is a very broad defense, And you can defraud people in innumerable ways. And I was defrauded in that I was not given information that I needed to have to make an informed decision. And I packed up all the books, I stopped making my payments, and I offered to return the books, and they sent me a letter and said, don't return them. On the day of trial, I came into the courtroom, and I had about 10 or 12 boxes of books stacked up. Here's your books. Judge Moody looked over at the other side, and he said, do you guys want to settle? And they said, no, we don't want to settle. And the judge said, well, I've read all the pleadings. And if Mr. Gordon can come in here with witnesses, evidence, and testimony and prove fraud, he said, he's not going to pay anything, and he's going to walk out of here with that box, that stack of books. And so the other side said, well, maybe we ought to start thinking about talking. And so we went in the back room, and I said, well, now, boys, I don't mind paying you for what I agreed to, but I'm not going to pay for what I didn't agree to. And we walked out with an agreement. And here's the bottom line. I didn't agree to buy those updates, and the fact that I didn't cancel, the fact that I didn't send them a letter and cancel, did not constitute a contract. And that's exactly what this straw man concept is, that if I don't send you a notice and deny it, that I agree with it. And it didn't work for Westlaw in Ozark County. And I don't know that that argument is going to work anywhere. I've never heard of it. Sounds fraudulent to me. And I don't think it's going to work for you either, Stuart. I don't believe it. You can try it, but I don't think it's going to work. You go on to say that you've got, it is agreed, it is agreed. This letter is in reference to a series of court dates beginning in March of 2003 where you acted as judge charging the legal fiction entity of Stuart, the straw man, under the criminal code. This letter is your agreement to the following facts. It is agreed that the charges were against the legal fiction entity of Stuart, the straw man, and not the living flesh, blood, and soul created by God Almighty. Did this guy, Stuart, did this guy, Ernie Bobowski, did he come into court and have an opportunity to deny this allegation that you're making that it is agreed? Did he have an opportunity to cross-examine you or your witnesses? Did you come into court at any time and produce a notarized agreement signed by Ernie Bobowski to these alleged agreements? And if so, when? What are the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence that you're offering? You see, this is why I'm telling you, this straw man thing here is just BS. It's just nonsense. I don't have to get into pages and pages. I told you in the last program about a lady that gave me a book. Now, I don't remember exactly, but this book is 2 or 3 inches thick. I mean, it's a binder, three-ring binder. Now, a two-inch, three-ring binder holds 500 pages of material, 250 sheets of paper on both sides, if they're printed on both sides, 500 pages. A three-inch binder, I think, holds around 1,000 pages. Now, that's a lot of material. And this lady gave me that three-ring binder, and she says, here, read this and tell me what you think. That was nice of her. If I wanted to learn about straw men, I guess I could have read all of it. I read some selected portions, just like I'm doing here with you, and I'm asking these questions. And, you know, the questions that I'm asking over here, if I was sitting here as the judge, Stuart, you got a lot of uphill proving to do before you're going to get my vote. Now, you asked me what I thought of this, and so I said I'm going to take the time to answer you. But if I answer you in a letter, I got to spend a lot of time. You know, several hours, you know, answering the letter. So I thought, well, why don't we spend this hours of time on the air and let's tell thousands and maybe millions of other people around the world the same answers. Now, you go on to say here in your letter, Stuart, that it is agreed that the fictitious title of Crown Prosecutor in a fictitious court can have no valid claim against me, the life, flesh, blood, and soul created by God Almighty. Oil and water don't mix. It is agreed that all of these proceedings are held in an admiralty court. It is agreed that I was subjected to a court-martial in a military court, and I'm not a member of the military. It is agreed that there were no injured parties other me, the living flesh, blood, and soul created by God Almighty, that had any valid sworn complaints. It is agreed that without sworn complaints from an injured party, there can be no basis for a charge. This is diatribe. Diatribe. It has no legal standing or merit. These are allegations. There isn't any evidence that any of this is true. There isn't any record that we can go to and look at names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, or evidence. Mr. Bobowski never had an opportunity to defend. I mean, there's just, you know, the whole thing is so specious, frivolous, without foundation, without any merit, as to be ludicrous. Now, I can sympathize with you lay people out there, truck drivers and miners and lumbermen and loggers and so on, that maybe you might believe. If you went to a meeting and you listened to some guy stand up there wearing a coat and tie and he's telling you this is the law, you might believe him. I'm not suggesting that you wouldn't. And, you know, he might sound so good that it sounds so believable. I think that those of us that are involved in the law, those of us that are lawyers or judges or prosecutors and defense attorneys and so on, you know, we would look at this kind of thing here and we'd say, you know, that guy ought to be card and feathered and run out of town on a rail for taking your time, effort, and energy, taking your money. And I assume, Stuart, that you paid money for this kind of crap. And I don't have an answer for you in regard to these various and sundry patriot groups that are selling this kind of crap to lay people, except to warn you or to warn others like you that if you follow this, you're likely to go to jail. You're likely to have some bad outcome from it. And, of course, you're going to sit there and write me a letter now, and you're going to say, well, what do you recommend, that I go to an attorney? No, no. Now, the attorney, remember, is an entrepreneur, and what he's going to do, he's going to lie to you also, and he's going to sell you his snake oil and mouse milk. So lawyers aren't to be trusted, but neither are these patriot groups. And I remember Larry Beecraft said that he had a conversation one time with Jack Smith over this very subject of straw man, and Jack Smith said to him that it was purely speculative, purely hypothetical, that they hadn't won a single case and never done a case in court. Well, that was many years ago, but now there's 8 cases that we can now see documented, and I'm telling you about this fellow Stewart up in Canada, and I suspect that Stewart is in jail right now as I speak, because he hasn't called me back, and he said he was going to. He wanted me to answer these questions, and he didn't call me back, so I thought, well, let me answer these questions and answers here over the air. Now, this is the second letter. Now, there's a third letter here where it says here that, Dear Ernie Bobowski, this letter is in reference to a series of court dates beginning in March of 2003 where you acted as judge charging the legal fiction of Stewart, the straw man under the criminal code. So here's what the background is, ladies and gentlemen. Stewart, the straw man, Stewart, the flesh and blood guy, he comes into court, and this guy, Ernie Bobowski, is the judge up in Canada. And Stewart here is dissatisfied with the judge's performance, and so he's going to use this uniform commercial code to harass this judge, to put liens on his house or to put liens on him or to claim that he owes him $14 million in damages and so on. I can't speak for you Canadians. I can speak, though, for Americans. And if I had a complaint against a judge, I'm looking down here at a book that is called Prosecutorial Misconduct. In America, when we have a prosecutor or a judge that takes bribes or is acting in such a way that it violates the laws of due process, equal protection of the laws, notice and opportunity to defend, a right to cross-examine, and so on, we can sue the judge or we can sue the prosecutor, we can sue these public officials in court. We can bring them in and we can produce witnesses, evidence, and testimony. We can, and if the jury agrees with us, we can win a verdict and we can collect money damages. And many judges now in America carry malpractice insurance. Just like doctors and lawyers and others that are in a professional occupation, profession, or in a profession, we call it here, if they commit an act of misconduct, they've got an insurance company, a bond, and then it'll pay for their misdeeds. I mean, we have a remedy here. I would presume that you've got such a remedy up in Canada. I'm not personally familiar with it, but I'm pretty sure that if I went up there, went into a law library, I think I could probably find a remedy. Now, if this judge acted improperly, there is a remedy, but the UCC is not the remedy. And if it is, I can't imagine how it could be. I cannot imagine how you, and over the telephone, you said, well, these Americans came up here from Minnesota, and they came up there to Canada and sold you people this bill of goods. Well, even if this worked in America, it wouldn't work in Canada. Canadian courts do not follow American law. You can't walk into a U.S. court and cite the law of British Columbia or the law of France. Now, we can cite the law of Great Britain. We Americans do have a little bit of an anomaly there. There are instances where you can actually cite Lord Blackstone or some court case that came out of Great Britain because our law came from Great Britain. But when we're talking about commercial law, modern law, you know, up to the minute law, when we're talking about damages and civil rights and one thing and another, even that wouldn't be applicable. In some odd circumstances, it might be applicable, but as a general rule, it isn't. Now, how you can listen to some guy come up from Minnesota and tell you Canadians this is the way the law works and this is what you want to do in Canada is beyond me. That even goes beyond common sense, doesn't it? I mean, just think about it. You know, I'm in Oklahoma, and I cite the law of New York. Now, there are some cases that come down, and there are some doctrines of law where I could actually cite a New York statute, law, or opinion, or a Supreme Court decision, and bring that into, under certain limited circumstances, into an Oklahoma court. There is a process for doing that. It's rare, it's unusual, it's not common, but yeah, it is possible. Did these guys explain to you how these unusual, extraordinary remedies might apply in Canada? And this, what are the credentials that these people are offering? You know, when they come into these Patriot meetings, you know, are these people lawyers? Are they judges? Are they professors of law? Are they, do they have any kind of background? You know, what have they done? Does anybody ever ask? You know, my common sense would say, if I was listening to some guy telling me about medicine or telling me about health, you know, what's your background? You know, are you a doctor? Are you a medical school instructor? Are you an MD? Are you an ND? Are you, you know, what kind of a background have you got? I kind of want to know a little something about that. That's just, you know, a little reason, logic, and common sense. All right, now we have covered, I think, the history of this thing called the straw man on the UCC. I've told you what I think about it. And I've told you what Larry Beecraft thought about it. And I cited the court cases for you. And I gave you an actual example here. I'm not going to read pages and pages of material here from Stuart. But I've read some of it to you. And I showed you that some of it is just incoherent, that it just doesn't make any sense. And this is what we call straw man. This is UCC. This is the straw man UCC argument here that they're making. Next time we'll take a look at credit and debt and usury, and we'll start to tie this story together, and I'll show you how bad this thing debt is here in the United States and around the world, and why it is it's causing such a problem. All right, we're about out of time again, so I'm going to have to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. It's heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and that The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.